there, it's Frank Buckley. Happy New Year. It's 2021. Of course, the issues we were experiencing in 2020, the pandemic, divisive politics, unemployment, business closures and school closures, restrictions on going out or getting together, all of those things, well, they just carried over from last year. And I'll be honest, like many of you, I suspect, I'm stressed out. I think a couple of things will help me, and maybe they'll help you as well. One is a good night's sleep, and I'm determined to be better about getting more sleep at night. And two, I think a little meditation will help me to de-stress. We've talked about meditation and mindfulness before on this podcast. Andy Puttickham, the voice of the mindful meditation app, Headspace, joined us as our first guest of 2017. Headspace just premiered a new show on Netflix, so I thought it'd be a great way to start 2021. Let's revisit part of that conversation with Andy as he talks to us about meditation and mindfulness.
You know, I'm such a big believer that in prevention over kind of cure or treatment. You know, I think meditation can be used for prevention, it can be used for management and for treatment.
Yeah.
But why would we wait until we're already struggling in life? Why would we wait until we need to go and seek out professional medical help or even go down the medication route?
Yeah.
When there are things we can do in life to maintain a healthy mind. So I'm a big believer, if we can get this into schools, if we can get young people looking after their mind in the same way that we teach them to look after their bodies, that there's potentially a very different future.
And so let's talk about that thing. We've talked a lot about meditation here, but and we've all heard by now this idea of mindfulness.
Sure.
Tell me about those two things and what Headspace does.
Yeah, so, well, first of all, just to clarify the difference, because often meditation and mindfulness are used interchangeably.
Yeah.
So if you think about mindfulness, so we all have this quality of mindfulness. It's just that we don't experience it that often because we're very distracted in our mind. But we all know what that feels like, to be present, even if it's just for a few seconds. Maybe it's listening to music, you know, it's a nice day here today, like maybe it's looking at the sunshine or watching your child play on the lawn, whatever it might be. But normally what happens is that gets interrupted by inner dialogue, by thoughts. We get distracted quite easily. So it's quite hard to learn how to be mindful whilst we're engaged in a busy everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
So meditation is the skill where we step out of that world and we take 10, 15, maybe 60 minutes, however long you like, but to train in the skill of mindfulness, of being more present, undistracted. And you then take that quality of mind, you take that training and apply it back into life again. So I would say Headspace, the quality of Headspace, as most of us kind of experience it, is when, you know, when we have a lot of mindfulness in our life, when we are undistracted, when the mind feels very spacious and calm, we're not necessarily looking for something else. I think often in life, we are chasing after happiness. You know, we're so busy doing that, we're so noisy doing that we don't find the peace of mind or the happiness we're looking for, because we're always chasing our own tail. So I think having that place in your mind, in your life, where you feel at ease, at home, where you don't need anything else to make you kind of happy. There is an underlying sense of contentment or fulfillment there.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of practical terms of how the app works, I've used it, and it's very simple, very accessible, and free, at least for the first few sessions. And so take us through it. Someone who's, because I think there is still this mystical quality,
sure,
and it's kind of weird to a lot of people, and if you don't grow up with it, it's not around you. It seems like, hey, I'm not a Buddhist, I'm not into that, that's not me. And first of all, you take away the religious component.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, because there is nothing religious about meditation. Meditation is a skill, and it's up to the individual to define what it is and how it's used. So yes, meditation has often been used within kind of religious teachings and traditions, But that's just one application of it. Equally, it's being used by Olympic sports teams to train for the Olympics. Yeah. And it's being used by parents at home and teachers at school. So there's nothing, it really is a skill that anybody can learn. In terms of using the app itself, you can either go to the App Store or Google Play to download the app. And then, the first part is free. And I'm not involved in the commercial part of Headspace, I can say this. CEO probably can't. But I'm really keen that we always have this free element. And it's not that it's free for the first few sessions and then it's... That bit is free forever. You can use it for as long as you like. We got an email from someone just recently. They were a professional sports person. Again, someone who's performed at the Olympics. And they said that for 2 years straight, they never paid for the app. They had just done Take 10 over and over and over again. And they couldn't believe how much they'd kind of got from it. Hmm. And for me, that just re-emphasized that we are so in this mindset of having to progress through kind of levels and everything else that sometimes we kind of miss the point. Meditation, in essence, is very simple, but it requires repetition. So it's important to go over it. So even if you can't afford it, you can just stay with that. If there are specific things you want to address, then yes, you can subscribe. And then there are meditation packs on sleep, anxiety, self-esteem, memory, performance, relationships. There's now a sports vertical dedicated to competition and training, recovery and rehab. There's a kids vertical for calm and for focus. For sleep and waking up. So it's quite a broad library now with well over 1,000 hours of content.
And these are 1,000 hours of basically Andy talking to us.
I try and talk as little as possible. That's my goal.
Right.
My goal is to give you just enough guidance to kind of keep you on track, but not so much that you don't get that sort of peace of mind that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. So right now it's... There are packs with a little more guidance, packs with a little less, and then if you meditate regularly and you just want to be part of a community, then there's even a place in the app where you can still have all the rewards and the tracking and everything else, but no guidance at all.
And tracking is important because one of the things you've talked about is how meditation isn't just a one-off. You don't meditate today and you're going to be fine for the rest of your life. You talk about, you encourage people to set a certain time of day, the same time if possible, to get into that routine. Why is that important?
I think for anyone looking to develop a habit and a routine, then same place, same time is a really useful thing. That said, not all of our lives are like that. Yeah. And we don't all have that routine in our lives. So sometimes we have to be a bit flexible with it. But if you can find that place, I think it's really important. And it's a journey of a lifetime. For anyone who exercises or has tried to have a regular exercise routine, now they'll know you can't just go to the gym and go on the treadmill once and expect to be fit for the rest of your life.
Right.
In the same way, if you sit to meditate, then you'll get some benefit.
Yeah.
But the mind won't be sorted for the rest of your life.
Right.
So think about it in the same way as training the body, kind of little and often, regular basis. Daily is amazing, but even if you can only do it 2-3 times a week, mm-hmm. you're still going to see some real kind of benefit from it.
And the benefit is not only the sort of the feeling of it, but there's a science to it and what it does to your brain.
I think that this is for a lot of people, especially in the West, is the most sort of surprising kind of thing. And I had no idea when I was in the monastery in the Himalayas that even some of my teachers there were getting flown. Someone crashing around in the background as the Headspace crew. I don't know. Even when I was there, some of my teachers were getting flown over to America and were getting put through MRIs to have a look at, well, what does the brain of someone who meditates all day, every day for 20 years look like? Mm-hmm. And what they found was the part of the brain associated with feelings of happiness and well-being, that's actually thicker and stronger in those individuals who meditate on a regular basis. So it receives more blood flow, and therefore we sort of spend more time there. So they got people in next to the lab who'd never done any meditation before, and over 8 weeks they monitored that, and sure enough the cortex got thicker and stronger. So it's not something fluffy, you know. It's not just a nice idea or even just psychology. This is physiology. Mm-hmm. Our brain, when we sit down to meditate, is actually changing. We're changing the neural pathways. We're sort of letting go of some of the old kind of habits and perhaps negative thinking we might have. And we're actually laying down a new network and hopefully kind of as a result, living a life which is a little more sort of happier and healthier.
Yeah. When you are guiding us through these meditations, how do you do it? Do you know that, okay, I have a script, or is it sort of, are you doing it with us, or tell us what your process is?
Yeah, so it's completely unscripted. All I do is before going into the studio that day, if it's like a 30-day pack, for example, I'll have one line, just a theme for that day. So for each of those 30 days, I'll have one line of writing. And it's just so that there's a sense of continuity and consistency as you go through the pack. And also it allows me to sort of think, okay, how does the pack develop? But I'm doing my best in every one to bring the teachings that I learned and make those more accessible.
Hmm. And so you pick a line, you're sort of on a theme.
Yeah.
And then
I'm just meditating with you guys.
Hmm.
So I'm in the studio sometimes. We don't normally do really long days, but we might do sort of 6 hours in the studio. And I'm there just introing the day, meditating with you, kind of talking you through the technique, leaving you with a thought to take away, maybe a little bit of homework, and then I'm back with you on the next day again.
And breathing is at the core of all of it, isn't it?
It is. So breathing is, I mean, the breath connects both the body and the mind. So when we're really stressed out and we feel tense, the breath is normally quite sort of short and shallow. When we're really kind of relaxed, the breaths are normally sort of deeper. With this type of meditation, we're not trying to forcibly change the breath in any way, but we're using the breath as an object of focus. And by watching it in a particular way, it begins to slow down. As the breath slows down, the body relaxes. As the body relaxes, the breath slows down a little bit more, the mind starts to relax. So we're kind of changing from this sort of circle of stress and anxiety to one of sort of calm and hopefully a bit of clarity instead.
And it is amazing how in this very noisy world that we're in, it's so easy to forget to breathe and what it sounds like to breathe.
Yeah.
And to just be.
Yeah.
Isn't it? I mean, when I did this last night, I thought, wow, I'm just sitting here and hearing things that I wouldn't normally hear.
Yeah. I think we have become so detached from the world around us. It's kind of ironic. We're more connected than ever before with the world around us, and yet I think most people feel more disconnected.
Yeah.
And although we may have more so-called kind of friends through social media and everything else, actually you speak to a lot of people, they feel a lot more kind of isolated and lonely than they used to. So I think this opportunity to just pause in the day, even if it is just for 10 minutes, and just reconnect, one, with ourselves, how we're actually feeling and kind of conscious of that, being present, but also with the people around us. And rather than seeing meditation as this thing that it's like I think some people see it as a withdrawal from the world, kind of, I've even heard people say it's quite selfish to sort of leave your friends and family and go and spend that time on your own. Mm-hmm. Instead, to think about it, actually, we owe this to the people in our lives. If we don't look after our mind, we might not always be that easy to be around, and we might not always be that kind and considerate to others. If we can find a way of, you know, as I say, sort of training the mind, looking after the mind so that we are kinder, more compassionate to the people around us, then I almost feel like we have a responsibility to do that.
Mm. Clearly, there's a market for it. Millions of people, as we said, have downloaded the app and are doing this every day. But it's not without controversy. You do have your critics. And in the New York Times in December, Zindel Siegel, who's a professor of psychology at the University of Toronto and a co-developer of a mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, a meditation-based treatment for depression.
Yeah.
Here's what the professor had to say. The problem I have with Headspace is the way they've expanded their content to target vulnerable populations, is how the professor put it. They have no research that validates the claims they're making in this area, yet their business model requires that they constantly grow their user base. What do you say to that?
Well, I think it's a very interesting approach. It's a little uninformed, and there's kind of a few different parts of it, I guess. So the first part is we're responding to our community. So yeah, I wouldn't say it's targeting vulnerable people. Basically, how our packs roll out, we put topics out to the community, and they then vote on what they would like. So depression kept coming back as top. We are really clear always when we put out new packs that we're not promising anything, we're not guaranteeing anything, and we begin every pack with a really important statement that says, this is not designed to get rid of depression.
Mm-hmm.
This is not designed to treat depression. This is designed as a support to better understand depression and to change your relationship with the mind. So there is no attempt whatsoever to suggest that it's an alternative treatment for depression. I mean, as a scientist, he'll know that there is really strong scientific evidence that mindfulness can be used. In fact, it's been shown to be as effective, if not more effective, in the relapse of depression. So what I think the point is, whether in-person training is different from digital delivery. So we actually have a full-scale clinical trial going on into not just depression, but also into chronic pain, into insomnia, migraine, all kinds of things. I think we have a total of 36 different studies going on around the world right now.
That you funded?
No, we're not funding them, because that would lead to some interesting kind of ethical questions.
Oh, right. Okay.
So they're being funded by other individuals, but they're using Headspace as the mindfulness intervention.
I see.
So 36 trials. We've got 5 full clinical trials. And as a platform, our interest is not how can we scientifically validate everything. I think that's one part of the puzzle. A really interesting part of the puzzle is just listening to how people are using it,
mm-hmm.
and how people are benefiting from it. So our kind of approach to this has always been, one, we never guarantee, we never promise. It's not a treatment, it's meditation. It's to help people better understand the mind no matter what they're going through in life. And then from a science perspective, yes, as we're doing this, we'd love to know kind of what's happening kind of internally. We know anecdotally that's been very beneficial for people for the last couple of thousand years. And we love the fact that it has that kind of depth of lineage and tradition. But science has its place too. And so we're doing our best to better understand the science as we grow.
Yeah, and you are growing. And let's talk about that explosive growth you've had. You were in London doing this in 2013, 14, and had a million downloads, I think it was.
Yeah.
You came to Santa Monica.
Yeah.
And now you have 11 million. And
yeah.
To what do you attribute that?
So, thankfully, I don't have to guess. So we have really sort of good data and a big team now who can understand those things. So over 80% of our growth has come word of mouth. Probably about 15% has come from PR, so just stories that we're featured in. And then a really small amount. We only started about 8 months ago doing a little bit of online paid paid advertising, but it's still over 80%, which is coming from just word of mouth. So it's just people telling their friends, and the more people that know about it, the more friends they tell. So it's kind of exponential, the growth in that way.
And what do you, where do you see it going? You've raised some $35 million in funding.
Yeah.
What is that going for, and what's sort of 2.0?
Yeah, well, right now it's sitting in the bank. The investors will be pleased to know. We're not spending it. I think right now we're working on the next kind of next generation of Headspace. We've listened to the feedback from people over the last few years, and there's a lot of improvements that, I don't want to give too much away, but that we're very excited about putting out next year. I think another part is broadening the library, and making sure that that we can meet people where they need us most, whatever they're going through in their life. And then of course there's the kids bit. And kids has been by far and away the most requested topic or theme ever since we started.
And this is for children to use the app, or parents Yes. to use it to help their children?
It's both, actually. So it's we've split it out into 5 and under, 6 to 8, and 9 to 12. By the time they get to sort of 8 and up, they're probably wanting to do it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But we equally we understand that parents want to know what their kids are doing and want to kind of join in at least to begin with.
Yeah.
So we try to do it in a way that it feels really engaging for kids, but at the same time, parent is something parents or even grandparents can do with their kids.
Yeah. So that was just a few minutes with Andy Puddicombe. His personal story is fascinating in terms of how he came to be the voice of Headspace and to be a co-founder. His story starts with Andy dropping out of college and traveling to Asia and becoming a monk. If you'd like to hear that story, just go online and search for Frank Buckley Interviews Andy Puddicombe, or maybe Frank Buckley Interviews Headspace, and you can hear our entire conversation with Andy from January of 2017. Now, the other thing I'm determined to do in 2021 is get more sleep. And there's no one better to talk to about sleep than the sleep doctor, Dr. Michael Bruce. He was one of our first guests in 2019, and we talked about sleep issues that people experience around the new year. Here we are in another new year, and some people are sleeping well, but I suspect many people are having sleep issues as they come from being on vacation, the stress of the holidays, and then here we are into a new year. Is it common to have sleep issues at this time of year?
It is common to have sleep issues because a lot of times people are trying to kick off the new year with new resolutions, things that they want to kind of do. And so many people will say things like, oh, I'm going to get up a little bit earlier so that I can go work out, or I'm going to stay up a little bit later so I can get those books read that I promised myself I was going to read, things yeah. like that. And sleep sometimes has a backseat to some of these ideas or new things that are popping up in the new year. My preference, of course, is the opposite. I want people to be catching up on their sleep. I want people to be setting themselves up with really good sleep schedules for the year, because if they really want to accomplish those goals, sleep is a great way to start out.
Yeah, so when I'm during the holidays, I end up getting my 7 or 8 hours of sleep, which
right.
is, I know, perfect for me. And then I come back to work, and it's a jarring thing where I go from sleeping 7 hours to suddenly I have to wake up. In the case of New Year's Eve, I had to be up at 3:30 in the morning.
Oof.
And it's shocking,
it's
to my
jarring.
System. Are there things that people like me that we can do so that we don't have that?
So first of all, your schedule is kind of unique,
yeah.
right? Fortunately, many people don't have to get up at 3:30 in the morning. But if for some reason you do, if you're catching an early flight or you're up early, much earlier than you normally would, there are a couple things that you can do to kind of help perk yourself up. So the first one is light. So it turns out that if people remember, light kind of turns on or off the melatonin faucet in your brain. Mm-hmm. Remember, melatonin is kind of that key that starts the engine for sleep. It's not everything, but you got to have it. So if you're waking up that early, actually turning on the lights turns out to be a great thing because it turns off that melatonin. So it kind of gets rid of that brain fog, which is kind of one of those things that's, you know, you're kind of walking around in the morning thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to make it through? Light turns out to be a really big helper there. Another big helper there is a cool, not cold, shower. So if you're going to be getting dressed in the morning, go ahead and do all of your normal stuff. But the last minute of the shower, take the knob and start to turn it a little cooler. Wait 10 seconds, a little cooler. Wait 10 seconds, a little cooler until it's cold. I mean, not freezing cold,
yeah.
But what it does is it actually shunts blood to your trunk. It's very, very alerting for you in the mornings, and it will, bam, wake you right up.
Oh, wow. I hadn't thought about that one. So if I'm someone who, you know, I've tried all these techniques that you just yes. talked about, and I'm still maybe waking up in the middle of the night and then I can't go back to sleep, mm-hmm. or I'm having various issues, and I mm-hmm. come to Dr. Bruce and I say, mm-hmm. you know what? I'm having problems with sleep. Put me through the test here. I'm a new patient. What are you going
to
ask me?
Oh, I can't wait to get my hands on you. So there's a lot of different ways that you can interact with a sleep specialist like myself. I have a very specific routine that I do for my patients, which is a little bit different than many doctors out there. Be honest with you, the first thing I do is I actually do genetic testing. Mm. So this is something new that I've started fairly recently, and you can actually take your data from something like 23andMe or Ancestry.com, and you can actually, I have a group that I run it through, and I can actually look, there are 74 different genetic markers in all of us that will predict how well or how poorly we sleep. And so getting that kind of information right out of the gates is critical because I can know, oh, is Frank a good sleeper or is Frank not such a good sleeper? Because that'll lead me down different paths.
Wow.
For me personally, I also like to do a sleep study on people, usually in their home, to rule out sleep apnea, narcolepsy, restless legs, anything like that that might be going on. But let's say they've got insomnia where it doesn't show up on the sleep study and genetically they seem to be okay. Sort of what are some of the steps and things that we can do there? Mm-hmm. Couple of different things. Believe it or not, there are several types of insomnia, right? There's I can't fall asleep versus I can't stay asleep versus I wake up too early. There's even insomnia associated with pain or anxiety or depression. Like it goes on and on and on. So then I have to figure out what kind of insomnia have you got? Mm-hmm. Because I have very different pathways for people doing what it is. But you mentioned waking up in the middle of the night, which, believe it or not, is the most common form. So let's talk about that for just a brief second. A couple of things that I've noticed with my patients who wake up in the middle of the night. My very first question, and this is going to seem a little strange, is I ask them, what was the time of your last meal?
Mm.
Right? So it turns out that most of the people who are waking up, and by the way, they wake up at exactly the same time every night. They say, I wake up at 3:23, you know, and they know the time very, very distinctly.
Yeah.
If you count backwards from the timing of their last meal, it's usually between 7 and 8 hours. They're out of fuel in their brain.
But why does that affect me when I'm asleep?
So it gets interesting, right? So you would think, most people think when you go to sleep, you kind of put the car in park.
Yeah.
Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, you kind of put it into third gear. And when you hit REM sleep, the dream sleep where your eyes are moving back and forth, your brain uses as much glucose as if you were awake and stimulated by watching or talking or things like that. So you end up running out of fuel very, very quickly in the middle of the night because you're fasting, you're asleep.
Huh.
So quick trick that I do for a lot of my patients, it works very, very well. Not all of them, but some of them, is I have them use a teaspoon of raw honey half an hour before bed. And you're thinking, raw honey, Michael, what are you talking about? Raw honey is very difficult to metabolize, so it keeps your blood sugar stable throughout that period of time, which is great, and it keeps you asleep because it's fuel that's kind of on board.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, if you're not a big sugar person, like, and honey's not your thing, guava leaf tea does the same thing. And that's available. You can get it on Amazon. I mean, just type in guava leaf tea. Not guava fruit, but guava leaf tea turns out to do the same thing as well.
Okay. And let's say when I get up at 3:23 in the morning,
right,
I now start to think about stuff. And I can't get back to sleep. And I keep thinking, go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep. But I can't.
Yes. Well, so I tell people all the time, sleep is a lot like love. The less you look for it, the more it shows up. Right?
Okay.
You know, so when you think about it, what you don't want to be doing is thinking about sleeping because that raises that level of anxiety and that makes it difficult to fall asleep. There's a little known fact that most people don't know is that in order to get into a state of unconsciousness, your heart rate needs to be about 60 or below, right? And so if you're thinking, oh my gosh, I got to sleep, oh my God, sleep, 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 you know, trying really hard, all that's doing is raising your heart rate. So a couple of quick things that people can do to lower their heart rate. My favorite is a breathing technique called the 4-7-8 breathing technique. So you breathe in for a count of four, you hold it for a count of seven, and you breathe out for a count of eight.
Hmm.
What this does is it gets all the carbon dioxide out of your lungs, but it gets all that new fresh oxygen into your lungs. But the most important thing, is it lowers your heart rate almost immediately. This was a technique that was actually created by the military to be used for snipers because their heart rate has to be very, very low when they're doing the things that they're doing out there. So this is something that's been adapted that works really well. Another fun one that I have that people can use in the middle of the night that I've even used when I've had problems. And by the way, I'm not immune to having sleep problems. I'm human too. And so on occasion, I've had these issues. Something's going on with my family or work. Is I count backwards from 300 by threes. Okay. Now this,
I've used this technique that you've given me before,
and it works really,
it does
really well.
Work.
It's kind of surprising that something that simple can work. But what it is it's a distraction technique.
Yeah.
It's so mathematically complicated, you can't think of anything else, and it's so doggone boring, whoosh, you're out like a light. Those are a couple of things I have people do. Another thing that people should remember is if they do wake up in the middle of the night, if you don't have to go to the bathroom, don't. A lot of people will say, well, I'm up, I might as well see if I need to go. Especially guys who are getting a little bit older. I'm going to be turning 51 this year, and so I'm starting to wonder, am I going to have to start going to the bathroom in the middle of the night, enlarged prostate, things like that. So number one, get your prostate checked. So if you do have an enlarged prostate, that's a very particular path you need to go down. But if you don't really have to pee, going from a lying position to a seating position to a standing position elevates that heart rate, and that's not what we want. Mm. So lying back down and kind of chilling out turns out to be one of the best things that you can possibly do.
And to that point, and to add to what you said earlier about light, if I get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom,
right,
is it a horrible idea to turn the
horrible
light on?
Horrible, because you just told your brain it's morning. Right. So if you do have a tendency to wake up, what I do, strategically place nightlight in the bathroom and one in the hallway to get there so you're not banging into that stuff along the way. Be very helpful.
Let's talk about what is the best time to wake up. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal just recently, the headline, something along the lines of 4 a.m. is the new 7 a.m. Is 4 a.m. the most productive time of the day?
No. So I don't agree with what the findings were in this article, but I'll tell you what they did is they interviewed a bunch of billionaires and asked them, what do you do? What's the thing that makes you the most successful? And a large number of them said, hey, I'm up at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and that's my time to be most productive. A couple of things that were really interesting about this. Number one was the fact that they weren't productive in a work sense. They were productive on the personal side. So this was time they were using for meditation, for prayer, for getting their day straight, lining up their day, exercise, things like that, which I thought in and of itself was pretty cool and interesting that these people were interested in doing that kind of stuff. But the biggest thing that they left out was their chronotype. So I know you know what chronotypes are, but I want to talk a little bit about that for people out there. Most people haven't heard the word chronotype, but it turns out they know what it is. If you've ever heard of somebody being called an early bird or a night owl, those are chronotypes. So these billionaires are early birds, almost exclusively. It's just pretty interesting in and of itself that we seem to see those types of people seem to migrate towards that. But I don't think anybody needs to be getting up at 3:30 to 4 o'clock in the morning. I mean, the earliest early birds I've ever dealt with are 5 a.m. to 5:30 people. But you're getting up that early, you're really being very disruptive to your sleep cycle. And by the way, only 15% of people naturally wake up early. The other 85% of us, myself included, are much better at waking up much later in the morning time.
And what is that chronotype?
So there's three others. So the early morning one is called a lion. Then you've got a bear, which is the normal folks getting up at 7, going to bed around 10:30. Then you got the night owls like me, what I call a wolf. I never go to bed before midnight, ever. That's just me. That's just how I am. And then there are people that I call dolphins. These people have got kind of a super crazy sleep schedule, and it's very difficult for them to find any really good sleep time. A lot of them are my insomniac patients and the people that I have a tendency to treat as well.
And the dolphins, are they're naturally having difficulty finding that sleep zone?
So here's where it gets interesting. So remember I was talking about the genetic testing a little while ago? So what I'm doing now is I'm finding that a lot of my dolphins, when I genetically test them, genetically speaking, they're bad sleepers. So this can happen, and it happens in about 10 to 15% of the population where our genetics just are not great for good deep sleep or good length of sleep. And so once I can identify that, then there are certain techniques that I can use for people that can be more helpful for sure.
Some of us are as you said, in my case, I'm is it the bear, the person who wants to wake up around 7?
Yes, that's you.
I'm supposed to be at the peak of my performance at 7 when I'm signing on the air for the morning news.
That's
which
tough.
Means I'm waking up far earlier than my body wants to.
Exactly.
So for people like us who are in this position where work forces us, or maybe it's a commute, to get up earlier than our chronotype suggests,
right,
what do we do?
So you're a shift worker, right?
Yeah.
I mean, think about it,
yeah.
right? But you're not doing the night shift. You're doing the super early shift.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people like there out there like that. So number one is getting that light exposure early in the morning can be very, very helpful for sure. Number two is giving yourself some fuel. Right? But be careful. What you don't want are lots of carbohydrates in the morning.
Mm.
Carbs make us sleepy.
Mm.
It turns out that when you ingest carbohydrate, it increases something called serotonin in your brain, which is a calming hormone. You don't want to be calm when you're trying to wake up.
Yeah.
You want to become more alert. So high protein, high fat turns out to be really good brain food. Things like avocado or an egg white omelet, things like that can be very, very good for you early in the morning as well. Other things that I want people to think about is movement, right? And so it's okay to exercise that early in the morning, but I'm not saying go out and run a marathon, right? 15 minutes of some good stretching, a little calisthenics, push-ups, sit-ups, chin-ups, something to kind of get the blood flowing can be very, very good. And here's one that I learned from my son, music.
Yeah.
Right. So my son, it's terrible to wake him up in the mornings. He's 16 years old. His whole biological clock wants to sleep until noon every single day. And he's got to get up at 6:15, 6:30 to make it, you know, to school on time. So the rule is at 6:30, he's allowed to put on whatever music he likes. And you know what happens? The whole house is bopping around. We're all listening to tunes. And you know what? It really energizes a lot of us.
Hmm.
So if you're up early, don't disturb your bed partner, but maybe put in your earphones and listen to some music that really kind of makes you kind of want to dance. I know it sounds a little silly, but that elevation of emotion attached to the music turns out to be really helpful to wake people up.
You talked about light a couple of times now. And when you say light, are you talking about those fancy lights that I have to go out and buy or just flicking on the lights?
Either or. Mm-hmm. So there are some lights out there that are specifically developed to help people wake up. If you go on to like Amazon and you type in light box or light therapy, you'll find a whole bunch of different ones there. But you don't have to go that far if you don't want to. Just literally turning on your regular indoor incandescent bulb lights or LED lights can actually be enough.
You talked about your 16-year-old son.
I did.
And how biologically, he wants to wake up at noon.
He does.
For those of us who have teenage kids who get frustrated thinking you are wasting the best hours of the day now in that bed. And at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you finally want to wake up and I've already had lunch.
Right.
I've already come home from work. You say that that's sort of what their biology dictates.
It is. And I'm here to let all the parents out there know, I get it. I know how frustrating it is. Leave them alone.
They have to go to school.
Well, I get that part. If they're going to school, they're going to school. But on the weekend, let them sleep in.
Mm.
A lot of parents are like, oh, you're wasting the day away. You could be doing so much more. No. It is not a waste, okay? I promise you, they're growing and they're healing in their sleep.
Mm.
They need more sleep than we do. Their bodies are still in those stages. Let them sleep. The best day to sleep in is Saturday, more so than Sunday for a couple of different reasons. Saturday is good because it's after a long week. These kids are usually pretty sleep deprived because they've been getting up so early and they can sleep sometimes until 2 o'clock in the afternoon, right? The reason I don't like Sunday is because if you sleep in late on Saturday and then sleep in late on Sunday, your biological clock wants to sleep in late on Monday, and that makes it more difficult. So the rule in our house is you can sleep as late as you want on Saturdays, but on Sundays, I like my kids getting up within an hour or so of their normal wake-up time.
Oh.
So if they're getting up at 6:30 during the week, I'm trying to kind of nudge them around 7:30, 8 o'clock with, hey, do you want some breakfast? something enticing to try to get them out of bed.
Yeah.
Turning on the music, turning on the lights, things like that are very helpful.
Okay. Let's talk about sleep trends for 2019. And
sure.
These are some things that you've written about in your blog, and we'll give folks a way to get to that so they can read these things themselves.
Sure.
But sleep trends for 2019, one of the things you talk about is inflammation and sleep. What is inflammation and how does it affect sleep?
So it's really quite fascinating, but if you start to look at the medical literature these days, almost every area of disease, specifically autoimmune disease, so we're talking things like Crohn's, we're talking about fibromyalgia, just people waking up and not feeling great, there's an internal inflammation, literally a swelling of the tissues. And that becomes very problematic because our bodies aren't allowed to flow as easily as they could be. So like when you get hurt and there's an inflammation, what's happened is all the white cells are going there to attack that problem. Well, if you've got inflammation all over your body, of course you don't feel great. So one of the things that we're looking at now is that sleep deprivation or the lack of sleep increases this level of inflammation.
Mm.
So again, I beat this drum all the time. The more sleep that you can get for you, the better. I've been a 6.5 hour guy my entire adult life, so 6.5 works perfect for me. Again, I genetically test myself. I figure these things out. Lots of people can do that kind of stuff. Figuring out what amount of sleep you need for you will definitely help lower that level of inflammation. There's also products on the market that can be helpful with this as well. You know, one of the big topics now nowadays is CBD. Or cannabidiol, which is a constituent of medical marijuana. So let's talk about that for just a second, because it's a great anti-inflammatory. Mm. So when you look at CBD, and if you're interested to learn more, check out some of my blogs on it. CBD is actually helps reduce inflammation across the entire body. Now, there are different ways that you can administer it. And by the way, when I talk about CBD, I'm not talking about THC, right? Because that's the psychoactive portion of medical marijuana. I'm talking about CBD, which is the really much more of the medicinal side of things. But looking for supplementation that has CBD in it can be very helpful, especially sleep supplements, because you can combine the sleep-inducing aspect of some supplements with the inflammation-reducing, and people get a lot better sleep.
Mm, okay. You've also talked about intermittent fasting and
yes.
sleep.
So this is kind of an interesting idea. So a kind of a newer idea that's come about. And by the way, when I say newer idea, this idea has been around for thousands of years, but it's kind of become trendy again, is only eating during certain specific times of day. In my book, The Power of When, we looked at chronotypes, but specifically, when do people eat? It turns out that if you can actually only eat during a 6 hour, 8 hour or 12 hour period of a 24 hour period, you can actually maintain weight or even lose weight almost no matter what you eat. Now, I'm not saying if you eat ice cream the whole time that you're not going to gain some weight, right? But if you can keep your intake to a certain period of time, again, 6 to 8 hours, you will actually maintain, and in some cases, lose weight. Intermittent fasting is doing this exact process where you only eat during a 6 or an 8 hour period of the day. Hmm. So a lot of people, what they'll do is they'll skip breakfast and then they'll start around lunchtime. Now, I say skip breakfast, that's not necessarily the best idea in the world. So make sure that you're, you know, supplementing yourself with vitamins, minerals, maybe even a green drink to help hydrate you, because hydration is still key. Hydration needs to happen 24/7. Mm. But the food intake can actually be quite different. And intermittent fasting, which again has become more of a trend these days and helps people lose weight or maintain a healthy lifestyle, can have a pretty big effect on sleep. So what you want to do is make sure that you're timing it right so that your sleep is at the right time and your food intake is at the right time.
All right. A quick round of things on sleep that I want to ask you about.
Sure.
Beds. Are beds important, and how do I pick the right bed for me?
Oh, gosh. This is a big question. So I believe that sleep is a performance activity, right? And so if you have the right equipment, you will perform better. So I'm a runner. Right. And so if I can run a 5K with my flip flops and some, and, you know, my torn shorts and a boombox on my arm, but my time's not going to be too good. Right. But if I've got my Asics on, my dry fit wear, I got my tunes going, I'm going to perform better. The same holds true with sleep. And that sleep equipment is mattress, pillow, comforter, duvet, what have you. That whole sleep system turns out to be very, very important. Hmm. Now, there are a ton of options out there for mattresses, okay? And here's the problem is you walk into one store and you find something that you like, and then if you walk into another store, it's completely different names, it's completely different outside coverings, and there's the inability to comparison shop is flagrant throughout the industry. Mm. So you really want to be able to go to a place where, number one, you can honestly know that you're getting a decent deal. And by the way, always look for the sale. Okay. Mattress selling seasons are very, very interesting. But the thing that people need to know is about 4 times a year, mattresses go on sale. Mm. Don't ever pay full price for a mattress if you can help it, right? And there's a lot of negotiating that can go on in that type of thing. Believe it or not, President's Day, which is going to be coming up not too far away, is one of those selling seasons, if you will. Right now, which is kind of the late December, early January, is not a big mattress time because people are buying other gifts, right? And spending their money in other ways. I personally love it when people give people pillows as a new option. And that's a nice place to start because mattresses can be expensive. And then what happens if you don't like it? And then the returns, like there's a lot that goes into that. But pillows are a little bit different. You can ask yourself 3 different questions and you can kind of narrow down your pillow choice. Question number one, squishy or firm, right? So do you like a pillow that you can mash up and kind of put where you like it? Or do you like kind of a block, like foam kind of pillow? So decide on that one first. The next is your starting sleep position. So if you're a back or a stomach sleeper, you want something very, very thin, right? Because if you have something thick, it's going to push your head forward. It's not going to do too well. You're going to have a hard time breathing. If you're a side sleeper, you want something thick because you got to make up for the space between your ear and what would be the bed.
Right.
You want your nose basically in line with your sternum or the center of your chest.
Mm-hmm.
And so having a pillow that lifts your head up is going to be important. Believe it or not, you should be changing your pillow about every 18 to 24 months.
But I love my pillow.
You love your pillow, but your pillow is continuing to break down as you use it. The human head weighs somewhere between 8 and 9 pounds usually. And so there's really no other piece of equipment that you have that's going to have 9 pounds pushing on it for 6 to 8 hours a day.
Right.
And so the structural integrity of the pillow itself begins to fail. Now, that's more on the squishy pillow side than on the firm pillow side or the thick pillow side. When we look at those pillows that are usually made of foam, those can last for up to 3 years. But honestly, your neck changes more during that period of time than other things. And if you wake up and you've got any stiffness or soreness throughout the upper part of your neck or the top part of your shoulders, that's a pillow problem, not a mattress problem.
I see.
The third question you want to ask is pain, right? So do I have any pain? Like, do I need to see a chiropractor or an orthopedist or somebody like that for neck pain? If you've got pain, then there are very particular pillows and you want to talk with your doctor about that because they may have some very specific recommendations. But I do have one quick hack or tip that I can give people that I use when I'm on the road. So sometimes you get to a place, a hotel, and you haven't brought your own pillow and the pillows are terrible, right?
Yeah.
They're overstuffed and they do that on purpose because they last longer that way. And I'm actually a stomach sleeper. I know, worst position, but I'm guilty of it. And these super fluffy pillows, they kind of crack your neck and it's terrible. So what I do is I actually take a towel, not the washcloth, but like the middle size towel, and I roll it up and I put it along the horizon or the bottom of the pillowcase inside, and it gives my neck that support. Most pillows, especially the overstuffed ones, they come together in what's called a knife edge, but there's very little support at the bottom, which is where it's hitting you, which is where you need it the most. But if you just slide a rolled up towel right in along the horizon and then you use it, it can really save your neck.
But even as a stomach sleeper?
Even as a stomach sleeper. So what happens? So as a stomach sleeper, I'm not face down. What's happened is I have to turn my head to one side.
Right.
And so a lot of times I actually cradle one pillow. I've got one pillow. I'm like MacGyver when it comes to pillows. I got a pillow here. I got a pillow here. I got something around my neck. People think I'm nuts. I sleep well.
Great. And to that point, in terms of sleep position, you say that stomach is the worst.
It is the worst.
Is the side the best or back the best?
So it's interesting. So the back historically has been the best because when you take a weight and you push it across the skeletal frame, the more surface area, the better, right? So if you're lying on your back, it can be supported very easily this way. Whereas when you're on your side, everything is pushing to one side and you kind of get what's called capillary crush or that tingly sensation on one side, which makes you have to move. However, if you snore or you got sleep apnea, the back is the worst position because your anatomy falls to the back of your throat like your tongue and makes it all the worse. So if you snore or have sleep apnea, your side sleeping is going to be better. Otherwise, back sleeping is probably the best physical position for you to sleep in. Mm.
Finally, sleep machines.
Like,
do you believe in those? The ones that make noise or ocean sound?
Oh, I love sound machines. So here's what's interesting about sound machines. So first of all, we can still perceive noise in our sleep. This is why alarm clocks work, right? But here's what's really fascinating is if it's too quiet, your hearing gets actually more acute. You actually hear more the more quiet it is, which means you hear the branch that's scraping along the side of the house. You hear the dog rustling in the corner. You hear everything, especially for people who are having a hard time falling asleep or staying asleep. I really like sound machines quite a bit. The one that I use is made by a company called iHome. So those are the ones that make like the boxes that go beside your bed where you can plug your phone into.
Yeah.
They've got a whole system that's got special sounds, meditations. And by the way, believe it or not, ocean sounds have been shown to help people fall asleep more quickly. I know you know, but I work with Princess Cruise Lines, and that's one of our great advantages is when people are asleep at sea, we get those ocean sounds that really help people sleep.
Again, you can listen to the rest of my conversation with Dr. Michael Bruce by going back to January of 2019 in our podcast archives, or you can jump over to YouTube and see my conversation with Dr. Michael Bruce. I hope you'll join me on KTLA this weekend for a new conversation on Frank Buckley Interviews, and I hope you'll tag me on your feedback about today's show at Frank Buckley TV on Twitter. Thanks for listening. Let's make 2021 our best year ever. And until next time, I'll see you on TV.